International Capital Market Insights from ICMA.
Hello, my name is Arthur Caramilla. I'm in charge of running the Secretariat of the Asset Management and Investors Council of ICMA. I'm here again this week with our chairman, Robert Parker, to analyze the recent developments on the markets in the context of the COVID-19 crisis. Bob, thanks for joining us again. We spoke 2 weeks ago and there was a growing concern around COVID cases across the globe. It seems that it's a persistent issue. How do you think this will develop and what could be the impact on the economy?
Well, as expected, a number of countries are experiencing second waves of the coronavirus, and notably France, the UK, Spain, more recently Russia, while other countries where they are struggling to contain the virus are still encountering serious problems. And that's very much the case in countries like India, Brazil, and the United States. So I think as expected, you know, we are seeing this upturn in coronavirus cases. I think part of that is due to, you know, the problems on imposing restrictions. It's also associated with the end of the American and European tourist season. And in certain countries, it's also associated with the return of students to universities. And for example, in the UK, there are now 90 universities which have coronavirus outbreaks. So those are the reasons. I think a number of factors which suggest that the situation today is very different from that in March and April. First of all, there is the demographic difference whereby, you know, the number of new cases is very much concentrated in people under the age of 30. And obviously age is a major factor in driving and determining the fatality rate. That's factor number one, the demographic change. I think, you know, the second change is that the outbreaks of the coronavirus have tended to be regional or local. So, for example, in France, you know, there has been a major problem in Marseille. You know, in Spain, we have had the problems in Madrid and also in Catalonia. In the UK, it is primarily in the north of the country. So rather than it being a national widespread problem, we do have these local or regional outbreaks. And if we look at the policy response from most governments, they are trying very hard to avoid national lockdowns, and you know, they do not want a repeat of the economic damage that was caused to America and to Europe in March and April. I think just two other factors worth noting is that new cases and fatalities in Asia ex-India remain extremely low. And, you know, I would highlight that countries like South Korea, China, Japan, and largely in Southeast Asia as well, seem to have successfully curtailed the virus. I think the other point to make is that hospitals are much more prepared today than they were in March and April, and the resources allocated to curtailing the virus and dealing with virus cases are much more profound. And that's also against a background of, you know, major work being done on trying to produce a vaccine. And obviously it is way too premature to forecast the timing of a successful vaccine being rolled out to broad populations, but it's not unreasonable to assume the vaccines will be available, widely available, and particularly to more vulnerable parts of populations in the first half of next year. So I think that, you know, although the headlines are worrying and there are certainly areas of concern, but as we work through the Northern Hemisphere winter months, I do think that we could see significant progress both in the vaccine and in the curtailment of the virus in the first quarter of next year. That, of course, means, as many politicians have alerted us to, that October and November may be difficult months, and that in turn may, in the short term, weigh on markets and the economies.
Is it fair to say that right now investors are not paying too much attention to this? As you said, there's no national lockdowns, it's contained locally as much as possible, and that they are looking more closely. The focus of attention right now is the US presidential election. Is it a fair assessment to say? And what do you think would are the probable outcomes of the election?
Well, our friends at Bank of America Merrill Lynch, in their survey of investor positioning and investor concerns, the result of what was really worrying, what was the biggest event risk for investors. And in the last survey, the US presidential election was highlighted as the most significant event risk. Now, obviously, We are now very close to the election, and a lot of postal votes have already been cast. What we have seen over the last few weeks has been, first of all, in the opinion polls, Biden's lead has widened. As we all know, there is a high degree of error in the opinion polls, and in the last presidential election, the opinion polls were consistently wrong in that they did not forecast a Trump victory. But the opinion polls have widened in recent weeks, and that was particularly the case after the first presidential debate, where, you know, I think everybody would agree that that was not a particularly helpful discussion in that debate. What has been more accurate, actually, in predicting results has been the betting odds. And there, quite an interesting situation whereby a month ago, the betting odds between Trump and Biden were very close indeed, almost to the point that it suggested it was unpredictable as to who was going to win. What has happened in the last 2 weeks is that the betting odds have widened in favor of Biden. Now, there are some political commentators who have suggested that Trump going down with coronavirus may produce a sympathy vote for him. I must say that all the evidence so far is that that has not been the case. And certainly his sort of performance as he exited hospital and his subsequent behavior in the number of tweets he has produced, and also we can talk about it in a moment, but is trying to delay or cancel the talks between the Democrats and the Republicans on a further fiscal stimulus, that I think has not produced a swing towards him. I think over the next few weeks we will see, you know, really a very difficult presidential campaign. I think it is going to be quite tumultuous. I think you have three scenarios. My central case scenario is that Biden wins and it won't be contested. Second case scenario, which I think is unlikely, and certainly the betting odds suggest it, that Trump wins. And then the third case scenario, which is what I would call a very difficult scenario, is that you have a very close result and Trump contests the result. And therefore, we then enter a 3 to 4 month quite difficult legal process where Trump tries to hold on to power and where there are obviously disputes, notably over the postal votes. Under that sort of third scenario, I think you would have a negative reaction in capital markets, bond yields down, equity markets down, and I think it would have a negative implication for the US dollar. As I say, my central case is that Biden actually has a fairly decisive victory. And, you know, therefore, you have to look at what the policies would be under a Biden presidency. I think inevitably, you know, there is going to be an increase in higher income tax levels. Corporation tax will probably go back up again. And I think increased regulation of the pharmaceutical, financial and tech sectors. It will be very positive for the alternative energy sector. I think that the Biden regime, or the new administration that comes in, is, however, going to move very cautiously because they don't want to enact policies too quickly, which could lead to an economic slowdown or trouble in capital markets, which would derail the recovery that we all expect to restart in the American economy in the first half of next year.
Bob, you alluded to the end of the talks between Republicans and Democrats for another fiscal stimulus. So this is delayed after the election. What does it mean for the Federal Reserve? Do they need to do more right now? What is the risk with this delay? Do we need more money between American households' hands right now? Is there an issue of gap between October and November?
The answer to that question is yes, and I would refer everybody to the speech that Jerome Powell gave earlier this week, where he and various other Federal Reserve members have emphasized the need for further fiscal action. And, you know, we had a bill passed in the House, obviously, which is controlled by the Democrats, for fiscal action with a program of $2.2 trillion. That has been sort of lost, basically, in the Senate, which is controlled by the Republicans. And as I mentioned earlier on, and has been widely reported in the media, Trump instructed Treasury Secretary Mnuchin to basically put back any further discussions on the fiscal stimulus to after the election. That is a problem because a number of employment support schemes are in the process of rolling off, and therefore there are short-term economic risks to employment, wages and consumption, and therefore economic data for October actually could turn negative. The Federal Reserve has warned about this. In the absence of a fiscal program, I don't expect the Federal Reserve to cut interest rates, but I think there is a very strong chance that they will increase their current program of quantitative easing. That program is $120 billion per month. That's broken down $80 billion in US treasuries and $40 billion in purchases of mortgage-backed securities. So as we proceed through October and into early November, they could certainly ramp that up, you know, possibly to $140-150 billion a month. I think, just to put it in hindsight, their balance sheet, the last reported number, is about $7.1 trillion, and that's increased by about $3 trillion since March. So I think further liquidity injections, further support from the Fed in the absence of a further fiscal program and current situation is very confused as to whether any fiscal support will occur or not.
Going back to Europe one moment, seems like ECB is still facing deflationary challenges. Can we expect also more from their side? I imagine if the Fed does more from also a currency perspective, they might be incentivized to do a bit more, even though it's not.
Yes, well, I think a number of factors. First of all, the latest inflation numbers in the Eurozone are negative. And Mrs. Lagarde has given a number of speeches and comments highlighting the risk of further deflation in the Eurozone. She considers there's a high probability that the headline inflation numbers could remain negative year on year for at least the next 2 to 3 months. Given the rise in commodity prices, I think that actually core inflation may stay negative, but headline inflation actually may move positive. But the overall picture is that it is far too early to forecast an upturn in inflation in the Eurozone, and deflation is more of a risk. So I think that's a point of concern. A second point of concern, and you can see this in the various statements from the ECB, is that after the V-shaped recovery that we had in the Eurozone, and actually across the European Union in May, June and early July, subsequently that V-shaped recovery has faltered, and that has been particularly the case in the service sector. So whereas activity numbers, notably in Germany, have remained robust, export numbers over the last 2 to 3 months have picked up very well. The consumption has been subdued, and I think that's largely because people are fearful of unemployment, or they're fearful that their wages are going to be cut. And the service sector has reversed somewhat, and you know, particularly poor numbers actually from France in the service sector, where the PMI has gone back below 50. So no, the ECB has its concerns. A subsidiary concern is that they don't want too rapid an appreciation of the euro. So there is a lot of discussion as to whether the ECB will ease monetary policy further. I think there's a very high probability that they will extend the maturity of the pandemic emergency program. There is a chance that they will increase the size of that program from 1.35 trillion. And I think also there is a good probability that they could ease the rules on the disbursement of quantitative easing, or the asset purchase program. That in turn, you know, would be very helpful for countries like Spain and Italy, which have been particularly challenged by the coronavirus. Although, you know, the good news is that Italy certainly seems to be actually successful in curtailing the virus any further, although we obviously still have major problems in Spain. But I think the overall picture, and this is consistent with statements from Mrs. Lagarde and other ECB members, is that we won't get a cut in interest rates from the ECB, but we will get, first of all, changes or increases in the pandemic emergency program, potential loosening of the rules on quantitative easing. And obviously the liquidity injections for the banks will continue, particularly at that subsidized lending rate of minus 100 basis points. And so far, actually, that program of TLTRO has been successful. Loan growth in the Eurozone actually has picked up quite significantly in the last 2 to 3 months. So there, the ECB, I think, has been successful. But the overall theme is that the ECB will ease monetary policy further, although it won't be in a cut in interest rates.
I'm sure it's pretty decisive that this monetary policy stance in the future will dictate what will happen in the market. It seems like the equity market has declined, but not rapidly or not sharply this month. It has more stabilized on the fixed income market side. Likewise, it seems that the market frozen in the sense that it's not making progress price-wise. What's going to happen next across asset classes, do you think, Bob?
Well, I think in September and early October, you know, we've had a reversal in equity markets, and that's against a background that, you know, equity markets in August and very early September were very elevated in terms of price levels and valuation. And I would just sort of highlight price earnings ratio on the American IT sector back in late August was close to 30. So a very elevated valuation. I think we also had some very concentrated positions in the American IT sector, both from institutional investors and also retail investors, and a lot of that investment was using leverage. So, you know, we had the classic example of a market bubble in American IT. So that bubble is in the process of deflating, and I think that probably has further to go, particularly given our earlier comments about the US presidential election and the probability of increased regulation on the tech sector. And actually in that, there was a very interesting report produced by the US House just yesterday on business activity in the tech sector and how it is concentrated amongst a few very large firms. Now, whether it be Microsoft, whether it be Apple, whether it be Amazon, etc. So I think that's been factor one. Factor two, obviously, has been concern that the V-shaped recovery that we've seen in May, June and July is starting to flatten or lose steam. And also the other concern amongst investors is, as we discussed earlier, is to what extent second waves of the coronavirus are going to challenge the global economy. Now, as we move into sort of November and December, my own view is that risk reward in equity markets will move from actually being quite negative in September and early October to less negative and potentially positive. And that's against the background of hopefully the coronavirus being dealt with in the first half of next year, monetary and fiscal policy staying extremely easy, and economic growth after a pause in the or a moderation in the fourth quarter starting to reaccelerate. And I think we could see signs of reacceleration come December and January. And of course, the outlook for corporate earnings in 2021 in most countries, most markets is very strong. So, for example, in the Eurozone, consensus forecast at the moment is that corporate earnings year on year, 2021 compared with 2020, will increase by more than 50%. So I think that are we in a trend bear market in equity markets and the implications that has for fixed income? The answer is no. You know, we've had this correction in September and early October. I think that that probably the markets will trade heavily with minor downside risks in October before we start to form a base towards the end of this month and then see more favorable capital market conditions in fixed income and equities towards the end of the fourth quarter.
One last point we didn't mention, but we always talk about this at the end of our podcast, Bob, is Brexit. Do investors actually care about Brexit anymore? It seems that no one is really moved on this. And we discussed this before. Do you still feel like if there is any impact on the market in case of a new deal?
Well, I think there's a very good reason why we always leave it to right at the end of our podcast, because I think we're all rather exhausted about the whole subject. Now, having said that, the next 2 weeks are very important for the Brexit negotiation. You know, the UK government, Johnson, has said he wants to achieve a deal or some form of compromise by the 15th of October. It looks as though there is progress being made on the state aid rules. There is still this issue on fishing rights, and there is a potential dispute between the British and the French. And although fishing is a very small part of both the British and the French economies, it is certainly quite a vexed issue politically. And, you know, for Monsieur Macron, he doesn't want to stir up trouble with the very powerful fishing community in France. So I think hopefully we will get some sort of compromise. At the moment, the markets are frankly assuming that there will be a weak agreement or at least an agreement to continue talks. My own view is that we will have a weak agreement and that sterling probably will appreciate against the euro. You know, at the moment we're trading at about 0.90 on the euro. Potentially we might move towards 0.87. One point to make is that globally, investors are very underweight the UK. The price-earnings ratio on the FTSE 250, it's one of the cheapest of the developed markets in the world. So I think even if we get a weak agreement, a rather unsatisfactory agreement, I think that we will see capital coming back into the UK. If we get no agreement, well, obviously the market reaction is going to be negative. So actually placing investment positions at the moment on whether we will or won't get an agreement, I think that is troublesome because there are still downside risks there. So if investors and our members want to take positions on Brexit, I would counsel caution.
Thank you both for the comprehensive overview. We'll be speaking again hopefully in 2 weeks.
Excellent.
It will be 2 weeks ahead of the US election, so plenty to talk about.
I think one can guarantee that the US election is going to become even more fractious over the next 2 weeks.
Thank you for listening to this ICMA podcast. For more podcasts and more information about capital markets, check out our website, icmagroup.org.